Session number 27075, reel 16.
Reel 16. With these offensive operations against the Italians, how much threat was there from them when you were doing operations against the airfields?
Only minimal, really. I don't recall Takali being bombed at all. We did have one or two strafing attacks. I don't think Takali was bombed by the Italians at all. They would go for Lucca occasionally, and sometimes Halfar. But normally it was Valletta Harbour. Valletta Harbour was always the big magnet to the Italians and the Germans, of course. Because, which made sense after all, because the submarines and naval forces operating from Grand Harbour were doing a lot of damage, particularly the submarines. They were doing a lot of sinking. Rommel was constantly being denied everything he needed. And if the submarines didn't get them, the Blenheims got quite a few. They got a lot, in fact. And I think the Wellingtons did a fair amount of damage, and Benghazi and Tripoli, where all the stuff would be unloaded. So that would be the main targets for them to at least try and reduce the damage that was being done to Rommel's supplies. But I'm sure Takali wasn't bombed by the Italians. It was a little better when the Germans came back, of course. And that was going to be just before Christmas.
You mentioned earlier Adrian Warburton. Did you ever meet him?
I nodded to him and raised a glass to him on one occasion in the bar, and he raised his glass back. No, I didn't actually. I can't say I met him.
Did he have a reputation on the island? Because obviously he'd done quite a lot of work, obviously the Taranto raid prior to the Taranto raid, and a lot of photo reconnaissance work.
Yeah.
I'm wondering what kind of reputation he had amongst other pilots.
Oh, fantastic! Warby was he was such a flamboyant creature. He wore the most outrageous clothes. He pleased himself exactly what he wore. I'm quite sure his station commander, all his seniors, probably were constantly at him to tend to smarten himself up. So he put on something else that was equally outrageous. And of course, he was always out. We'd get the intelligence summaries in every morning, which related everything that had been happening the previous day. And hardly a day would pass when Warburton wasn't mentioned as doing something or other. It was said that he probably shot down more enemy aircraft than any of the fighter pilots on the island. I think that's probably true, too. Because he operated by himself wherever he went, he'd go alone. And he'd find enemy aircraft, knock them down. And he was highly regarded. Warby was Warby. He was unique.
And you mentioned that obviously he wore what he liked to wear. What about yourselves? What were you wearing now you're in Malta?
Oh, just ordinary khaki drill in the summer. the issue stuff, of course, were sort of knee-length shorts, you know, and floppy baggy shirts and things. That was all issued before we went, and very soon ditched. And we'd trot off down to the tailors in Valletta and get some nicely cut shorts and shirts and so on. But summer weight stuff. Most of them had the good sense to wear some sort of flying suit. Usually, in those days, we weren't used with the flying suit as such. We got Sitka suits, which were designed for open cockpit pre-war aeroplanes, much too hot to wear. And of course, the Irvine jackets we all wore during the B&B, again, too hot to wear. But some of them did take sort of white overall flying suits. But I didn't. I was quite happy in my khaki. Rather foolish, I suppose, if I had the situation had arisen where I could have got badly burned, I would have been. But I was lucky.
Would you wear, obviously flying helmet, would you wear your goggles as you mentioned you did in the bathroom?
Always wore them pushed up. I didn't like them over my face. They were too restricting. And I didn't like them either. Now, the Americans, I had great big wrap-round goggles, and they always looked to me rather good. But ours were flat front and flat side, and a rather heavy metal frame. And I didn't find them at all comfortable. I think we always wore them up here in case we went on fire and the flames came up through. So you pull them down. But the other thing about them was this heavy metal frame. If you've got the canopy closed, which was usually the case above 15,000, most of the time below 15 we had the canopies open. And this blooming goggle knocked the top of the canopy. So I didn't use them very much.
And would you wear flying boots or shoes? Or?
Again, in the hot weather, I'd wear shoes. In fact, got a picture somewhere.
Would there be a change of clothing, obviously, as you went into the winter months?
Yes. Yes, we would go into ordinary blue uniform for the winter months. Of course, the summer does last well into late autumn, doesn't it, in Malta? I think it was probably mid-November before we went into blue. So it's still quite warm even then. But then we'd wear blue right the way through. It would start to warm up April, I dare say. March, April, start to get warm, or even earlier. And we'd go back into lightweight khaki drill then. Yeah.
And what about facilities for you as pilots? Where were you living while you were on the airplane?
Ah, yes. Well, on arrival, we were billeted down in the local town, Worcester, which is just a little Maltese town, but it does boast the world's second largest dome. A massive, great thing in this little tiny, poor village. And they managed to produce this fantastic, huge, great, it's like the Albert Hall twice over, you know. And we were billeted in houses down in the town there. We just walk up the rather grubby little lane to Tollycumbo, which is a large mansion belonging to one of the Maltese grandee families. He'd scuttled off to Gozo, I think, where it was a bit quieter. And we had this large house as pilot's mess. And we had proper rooms there with beds and mosquito nets and so on, cupboards, places. And we stayed there right through until things really got too warm. And March, when the Spitfires arrived. And the Germans did put on a tremendous effort to deal with this first arrival of Spitfires. And the Tollycumbo got clobbered. And we moved up the hill to this wonderful town of Mdina, where the Polishkinos lived, the Bastions. And there was a big, a hotel perched on the top of the Bastions there, the Point of View Hotel. And that had been commandeered, and we were put in there. So it was quite comfortable. It was rather nice. Fantastic view up on this hill right across the island. And if you were, when we were off duty, we'd be up there on the balconies, watch the whole scene. We'd see the dive bombing on Valletta and Lucca. In fact, you could pretty well see everything that was happening. And it was really fantastic. Until the day came when they decided that we were too comfortable in this place. And a big raid came onto Kali. I think there were about 40 Ju-88s involved. And they dive-bombed Kali. And I was off duty at that time. We're up on the balcony as usual. And then it looked as though they were getting a bit close. A lot of the bombs were going on the airfield. Quite a few were going wide. And we thought we'd better come down off this balcony and go and stand out in front of the square where we could keep an eye on things. Been out there for a few minutes, and they were diving down one after the other, coming towards us and diving that way. And then one kept coming and kept coming. And all of a sudden he stuck his nose down and was absolutely coming straight for us. Now whether that was by design, of course one never knew. But it did rather look, in retrospect, that he knew we were there. Sir Philip had told him. And this chap was detailed to clobber us, and he did. And he was coming straight for us. And somebody yelled this way, and I looked round, and he was running back into the foyer of the hotel. And at the back of the foyer was a flight of stairs. And we rushed for those stairs, went down them to find ourselves in a tunnel which went underneath where we'd been in the square. And at that instant, there was the most tremendous crack. And I thought the whole roof had come in. And after a while, we pulled ourselves together. Further along the tunnel were a lot of Maltese. They were yelling and wailing. And we went back up the steps. And the whole of the inside place was absolutely shattered. Went out onto the steps, and I thought there were two sacks of potatoes down there. And it was, in effect, two of the Spitfire pilots that had brought us the aeroplanes a few days earlier. They just hadn't moved quick enough. And those two, and I think there'd been about half a dozen of us in that group. And certainly two, if not three, were killed by that bomb. Anyway, I was one of the lucky ones. And that was our little bombing story.
In the first 6 months when it was just the Italians, you mentioned that period was quite a pleasant period.
Mm.
And there was no bombing, only odd strafing raids of the airfield. What was the situation like on Malta itself? Was there rationing of convicts getting through?
Yes. During the period of the Italian War, things were very much as normal. There was plenty of food. I say plenty, but there was a good selection of food. Any amount of booze, and indeed there was a big brewery working flat out. So there was plenty of booze. Um, As with the civilian population, I think they were all right. There would have been certain shortages of probably household necessities, that sort of thing. But I think they're all right for food. The majority of them, of course, the majority of the population, which is 330,000 on this tiny island, the majority of them are poor. I think they got enough food and were able to clothe themselves and lead some sort of life, but I don't suppose it differed very much from the lifestyle that had prevailed in the island since the beginning of time. They were a peasant population mostly, although a very large number of them worked in the dockyard, and indeed the dockyard held the island together. So there'd be large numbers working there and earning money, and they were to support a reasonable lifestyle. And then there'd be, as always in Mediterranean countries, the big families, the ones who've got everything, all the money and all the properties and all the privileges and all the political appointments. And of course they ran the show. They were all right. They entertained us well. The Politicine, as I mentioned, but there was also the Marquis of Scicluna. Marquis of Scicluna was the banker. And he built himself a fantastic palace on a little promontory sticking out of the sea at Slema, St. Julian's rather. Dragonara Palace, it was called. It was a big square building. And he built this place, I don't know when, but when the war came along, he built an underground version. He tunneled under the building and had a complete suite of rooms and everything down there. An entire household was down there. I think to get down, he went down two flights of stairs. And he lived down there. He'd got two daughters, the million-dollar babies, they were known as, of course. Not that anybody could get within 100 miles of them. Chaperoning in Malta, 100%. And yes, he was a charming old man. His wife, the Marchesa, she was typical Maltese mama, keeping an eagle eye the whole time. But we'd be invited to go and take tea with them from time to time. Other than that, one really didn't get to know very much about individual Maltese people. There are always the faces, I mean, the people in the mess, of course, one always knew. But we did tend to live a rather private life as far as the Maltese were concerned. But they were always very, very jolly. The CEO had a car which he could use until petrol got very tight. But we would go about on the local buses, which were great fun. The drivers would deck out their buses with a theme of some sort. One in particular, he'd been in films in Hollywood, this bus driver. And he was in the Love Parade, which was a Jeanette MacDonald, Nelson Eddy piece from the 1930s. And he decked out his bus, which he called the Love Parade. He painted on the side, huge Love Parade on the side of his bus. And it was filled with stills from these films he'd been in. And jolly chap. And that was typical. Some of them chose a warship for the theme. There'd be HMS Warspite or something. I think one of them gone for Spitfire. Speedfire. I don't remember a hurricane. But, yes, it was a nice place to be.
Because you mentioned, obviously, during that period, the Italian fighter tactics. Mm. But were the Italians continuing to bomb the harbour during 1941?
Oh, yes. Yes, they'd come over. Not very often. Usually at night. In fact, more often at night than at day. If they did come by day, they'd come with a huge escort. But they'd come singly at night. And, in fact, a unit called the Malta Night Fighter Unit was formed with the most experienced of the pilots from the three squadrons. And they did quite well. It was done on the basis of cooperation with the searchlights. As a hurricane, it was virtually impossible. How very nice. Even on a bright moonlit night, when you think you couldn't possibly miss seeing an enemy aircraft, you just couldn't see them unless you were very lucky and just maybe get them silhouetted against a bit of white cloud. But you'd be very lucky to see it. So they relied on the searchlights to illuminate the aircraft. And once one had got it, the others all come on, give a cone. And then the night fire, the guns would be told tight, and the night fire would be called in. And they got quite a few that way, quite a few. In fact, when there was one going on, everybody would pour out into the streets, you know, somebody would say, Bombay, they come yelling. We'd be drinking in the bar and they'd come stick their heads in, Bombay. So we'd all rush out in the streets and watch this go on. A chap called Barnwell, he got quite a few before he got killed. He was one of the Barnwell family, three of them. And I think I'm right in saying that Father Barnwell designed the Blenheim. I might have got that medal, I think so, there. And one by one they got killed on different sorts of operations. Barnwell and Malta. The Italians, one thing the Italians did attempt to do was help yourself.